Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Coming to you after the Packers defeated the New York Giants 27-20. Guys, we got kicked out of the stadium tonight, so we're wrapping up the game here from the hotel.
And some might say we got blown away. We got blown out of that stadium. Very windy day.
Very windy. I was out there for all of 5 minutes and almost was just knocked down, so... You know, at least it'll make you wonder, did the wind have any effect at all at some points in the game? And, you know, who knows? You know, some might say it was, some might say it wasn't. But at the end of the day, the Packers did still find a way to get a win, improving to 6-3-1 on the season. And we can just kind of run through the game and kind of have some observations. And Ryan, you can go ahead and start it off. Just overall thoughts on the Packers' victory tonight.
Yeah, you know, if you consider the NFL season almost like a round of golf, which will make a lot more sense when they go to 18-game schedules, but each week is its own hole. Like, this was a par. You know, it wasn't a birdie. It wasn't like an overly impressive win, but it wasn't a bogey. They won the game. It was a par. They got a win. They needed a win. They ended their two-game losing streak. You mentioned the win. I don't think there's any question the win had a very significant impact on this game. At one point during the game, I looked at my weather app on my phone, and it was telling me 17-mile-an-hour consistent wind, 34-mile-an-hour gusts. And then, Dom, you and I were on the field after the game. It was very, very windy. But the thing is, to me, it was kind of an equalizer. Like, it was the same for everybody. And I think that the Packers, especially on their offense, really got an indication today of who can make plays through adversity and who can't. And at some point, the thing that's just overriding in my head is that at some point, this offense that just takes what's there, regardless of the name on the jersey, the number, they've got to get the ball more to their best players. Christian Watson showed today that he deserves to have more of this offense built around him. You know, for him to do what he did, and he had a drop. It was a tough drop. It was a tough catch, but it was a big one, 3rd and 2 down the right sideline. He had the ball in his hands, could have caught the ball. But for him to come back and make a hellacious catch in the quarter end zone, game-winning catch, 4 or 5 that he caught on targets, but only 5 targets. Like, this offense needs to get the ball to its best players more often. I just don't see them doing that. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. Spoon, what about for you? Just takeaways on the game.
I thought Jordan Love came up big when he had to. He was once again under too much pressure. And that affected the offense as it has. And I thought he kind of overcame it. I think they were benefited by the fact that the Giants are one of the few teams who've played a lot of man coverage against them. And they have a lot of guys like Matthew Golden, like Christian Watson, Wicks, who can win in man coverage. And I think you kind of saw that today. And anytime they get man coverage, you know, Christian Watson should be their number one look, and Golden should be too. Now, he's having trouble staying healthy. He hurt his shoulder again, and I don't know what his status is going to be. And that was always my concern about him, was his size and whether he was going to be able to handle it. So we'll see about that. But that, and the other takeaway I come away with is I thought they were super non-aggressive on defense. I really thought that Halfley just backed off and tried to let the Giants make mistakes without trying to pressure them. And I couldn't figure that out. The only time they did really pressure him was when he blitzed. And it worked, But for some reason, he was really afraid to do it. So those are kind of my takeaways from the game.
Yeah, it was really fascinating to think about that. And we can stick with the offense, and then we can talk more about defense in a minute. And, you know, Ryan, you really did just kind of mention it. You talked about Watson, and you talked about just how the offense – I mean, they scored 27 points. They don't lose when they score 27 points. But there were still just a lot of – moments out there. There's just a lot of meat kind of left out on the bone. You know, there's so much made about Jordan Love, which is common in the league. A quarterback's going to get a lot of criticism and a lot of blame. But at the same time, and I've said this since day one, he has to have help. What were there, seven drops tonight? Was it seven or seven six? Drops.
I think it was five or six, depending five on what you
know. I had him at seven, five in the first half, two in the second.
So yeah, anywhere from five to seven. Yeah. And so I guess that's something that I'll go ahead, Spoon.
I just said I had two Dobbs, one Wicks, one Fitzpatrick, and one Musgrave.
You know, when I was thinking about this passing offense and trying to figure out how they can have some success there, something that I'm not sure what route they go is at tight end. We knew what Tucker Kraft could do for this offense, and you know, they tried to use Musgrave. Josh Wiley scored a touchdown, and they used Fitzpatrick as well. Spoon, just, you know, what are your thoughts? And then, Ryan, you can jump in after. You know, what are your thoughts on what direction they go with the tight ends?
Yeah, well, there's only so many ways you can use a tight end, and you're going to have to use them on the line of scrimmage. The question is, how much are you going to go two tight ends? How much are you going to use a jumbo tight end? How often? How are you going to use Musgrave? Are you going to try to split him out and try to make him, you know, Travis Kelce when he's off the line or someone like that? Or are you going to try to make him do what Tucker Kraft does? And right now I think it's pretty clear he can't do what Tucker Kraft does. I'm not sure he can do anything but run down the field just on deep routes. And so somehow they got to carve a role for him and figure out how to split some reps with Fitzpatrick and Weil. But to me, I would go to more of a 3-4 wide receiver set, kind of back to the days of when McCarthy was here and Rodgers, and see if maybe you can alter your offense to get better players on the field, because right now your tight ends aren't giving you much.
Yeah. Ryan?
Yeah. No, I think Spoon just took the words right out of my mouth there. I completely agree. It just seems like when Luke Musgrave is getting targeted, he's getting targeted on the same areas of the field that Tucker Kraft got targeted. And Tucker Kraft is the yak king, right? He can take that short pass, the flat route, the check down, stretch into a big play. That's not Luke Musgrave's game. That's never been his game. Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft are entirely different breeds of tight end. They've always been very, very different. And instead of building an offense that maximizes the strengths that Luke Musgrave has, and he does have strength. He can stretch a seam. He can get separation downfield. I know he had the drop today. Where was the drop? It was close to the line of scrimmage. It was a check down. It almost was a fumble, right? He can finish plays down the field. Instead of maximizing those strengths, they've kind of just put him into that Tucker Kraft role without changing their offense around Luke Musgrave, this different breed of tight end. So I think that there's plays that can be made there if they adjust. We just haven't seen them adjust.
And that's the thing that's raises questions to me is, so, you know, all of a sudden they can switch to Malik Willis, and I'm talking about more like last year, where they can change the offense in 1 week and make him extremely successful, but you lose Tucker Kraft and you can't adjust your offense to fit for Luke Musgrave, who's a completely different player. And that is a head scratcher to me, because you know the tight end's really important in his offense, but yet I don't see any real adjustment other than trying to use him the same way you use Tucker Kraft.
Yeah, that's going to be what's really going to – it's going to be fascinating to see how they'll use him, how will they utilize him the rest of the season. But, Spoon, I can't help but ask because you just brought it up. So as soon as I heard it, I thought about Malik Willis. I mean, I think I brought this up last year too, but I just have to again. Is there something – is there like a package that LaFleur could go to have Malik Willis in there? I know you don't want to take your starting quarterback off the field much, but just watching the spark he had for that offense in this game, but even last year when he came in Jacksonville and then the two games when he was a starter, I want to get both of your guys' thoughts, and then Ryan, you first, and then Spoon. You know, do you guys think that they should find a way to use Malik Willis in some capacity with this offense? What about you, Ryan? Your thoughts?
You know, it's interesting because I think when I watch the Packers offense, I see a group that's almost trying to do too much. Like every play, they're shuffling guys in and off the field, different personnel groupings. They try to get the ball to everybody. How many targets did Jordan Love have today? It was close to double digits again, right? It's spreading the ball. They're doing too much. And now we're saying do something else. And yet I also agree with you because every time we see Malik Willis on the field, there is a different dynamic, a different dimension, a spark that – and this is no knock on Jordan Love. Jordan Love was 6 of 13 in the first half. Five of those seven incompletions were a drop. There was a six that was batted at the line of scrimmage to an open Josh Jacobs. I don't know what more he could have done. Like that is that he was efficient. He just wasn't getting help. But I agree. There is a different dimension there. They're doing so much instead of just whittling it down to what do you do best? Who are your best players? Are you getting them the ball enough? And Malik Willis might be one of, you know, on defense, you talk about having your best 11 on the field. He might be one of their best 11, just what he provides. If he is, have a package for him. But you can also, it's okay to, like, get rid of some of the stuff you're doing. I understand Romeo Dobbs gets open a lot. But, and that's why he gets a lot of targets. But how many times do you need to see Romeo Dobbs get wide open, drop the ball, until it drops a part of the game, but at some point they hurt you. At some point, these self-inflicted things need to stop. There needs to be accountability for if you're not executing the play that's there to be executed on a fairly regular basis, do you have other guys have a chance? So, and obviously Malik Willis is not going to replace Romeo Dobbs, but just getting your best players on the field and whittling it down to what do you do best instead of trying to do too much, if that makes sense.
Yeah. For me, I just think about it like the Packers have struggled running the ball. You have a guy that could really open things up because he's a running threat. And if he has to throw the ball, he can do that as well. So that was just why I thought about it. Spoon, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I like where you're going with it. I think one of the things they do really well when he's in the game and they run – the read option, they seem to block that really well. They are really good at angle blocking, at doubling up on guys. And they seem to get a little bit of juice when he's in the game. You know, they keep the defensive ends from crashing down. They just run the ball better. When's the last time we saw a guy run in the end zone like Emmanuel Wilson did with nobody there? I mean, we had the one time with Josh Jacobs a couple of weeks ago. But I think you use him like a wildcat. You know, I think you bring him in. It doesn't have to be for 10 plays. It can be for 3 plays or it could be for 2 plays. But it offers a change of pace. And I think it does keep teams honest. And you're not afraid. The one thing about him as a wildcat is you're not afraid to throw the ball with him because he's got an arm. So absolutely, if you've got multiple people who can move the ball, then you got to do it. And so I, you know, LaFleur seemed really open to it, but I don't believe him. You know, I heard him say it after the game, but I don't believe it.
Yeah, we'll see that when, or we'll believe that when we see it. You know what's interesting about that idea, Spoon, is I understand exactly what Matt LaFleur was saying after the game, where he said when Malik Willis took that 16-yard read option, he kind of held his breath because he's already got one quarterback back in the locker room getting his shoulder checked out. Boy, if anything happens to Malik Willis there, you're in big trouble. But there's a way to incorporate that into your offense and not be afraid, right? If you incorporate
Malik Willis is an option quarterback. He's not a guy who's like Jordan Love doesn't know how to get down or run an option offense. Malik Willis has years and years of experience of being in that, and he's not going to let himself get crushed.
Sure.
Like Jordan Love did.
And sometimes things do happen. But my point is, if you can incorporate that into your offense, when Jordan Love is fine, when he is playing, and still get the same benefit, there's nothing wrong with that. You're allowed to do that. And if that means I'm with you, Dominique. If that helps loosen up your run game a little bit, that's a good thing.
Yeah. That's just the biggest thing I watched in that first half when he came in. But one thing that stood out to me, even with LaFleur, he said the play that they ran with Malik, it was the play that they were going to run with Jordan anyways. And he said Malik was confident when he ran. He was fearless. And so it's just something that it made me wonder, is there a couple of plays here and there throughout a game where it's like, let's see what we get here.
Well, you want Malik Willis.
Yeah, if they don't, then I think that's a mistake.
You want Malik Willis running that play, not Jordan Love. Jordan Love can get 5-6 yards on that play, but Malik Willis has a different kind of athleticism and speed. That and by the way, you also need to find a way to not have Jordan Love get a shot like he did on his left shoulder and have to leave the game. Like you can have Malik Willis run that play. He's better at running that play.
Yeah. I do want to talk about the offensive line, and Spoon, I'll let you start, because the first full game was Sean Ryan at center. They're kind of sticking with the group that they have, I guess, just for continuity or thinking that they might have some get into a rhythm with this group together. You know, from just what you saw throughout the game, what did you see? I mean, I guess they ran the ball as they were supposed to against this team at times, but I don't know. What did you see from the O-line?
Sean Ryan battled. You know, he had a couple of instances where he let someone run by him that I noticed. But, you know, he had a couple snaps that were off. But that's to be expected for guys playing center for the first time, you know, at length. And I think they're going to be fine there. I don't think they have to do anything else. I think he's going to be okay there. I'm, you know, going to keep arguing that Jordan Morgan's in the wrong spot, you know, at right guard. I'm tired of seeing him get, I feel bad for the guy that he keeps getting bulldozed. And, you know, he's just not built for being in at guard against 350-pound guys. He's a quick guy. Otherwise, you know, they allowed too much pressure. Guys are getting pushed back too much. And I don't know whether that's a technique thing, you know, if they're not anchoring their feet, if their hands are bad. I don't know, but I don't think they're that bad that they should be continually getting driven backward. And so there's something going on there, and they got to fix that.
Yeah. Ryan?
You know, it wasn't supposed to be an offensive line that got pushed back when all offseason they spent it adding just bulk to that offensive line. I mean, they drafted a 336-pound offensive lineman that I'd like to see at right guard. I know they didn't make that – they only changed the center position because of Elton Jenkins' injury this week, but I'd select see Anthony Belton at right guard.
Yeah. I mean, they do like Kennard, too. They go to him a lot, and they've been impressed with his play when they've used him in some of those, like, you know, jumbo packages, and it's kind of like a blocking a tight end. So I don't know. We'll see if they can maybe put a couple of more games together and figure it out. But I mean, yeah, we talked about Jordan Morgan at length in terms of what's his best position. And I don't know. It's safe to say.
I'm not trying to say that Jordan Morgan is horrible. He's not horrible. He's a good pass blocker. But put him where he's not at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's where he's at. And I don't know. You know, I'll have to look and see. I don't think Rashid Walker played that bad. I know he had a holding call. I'd still just think those two should be rotating, and you should have some bulk on the right side.
Yeah,
that's my feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that, I mean, from what we've seen, I mean, it's a fair argument. I think we can move on and talk defense a little bit. And I mean, they gave up 20 points, and it was fascinating to watch the group because of what they did against the Eagles. And they admitted, because there's an interim coach for the Eagles, there's Jameis Winston, they saw some things in this game that they didn't see on film, which isn't a surprise. But it was weird to kind of watch them never really play comfortable out there. I think that they were really on their heels a lot. And Spoon, you even mentioned it earlier about how when they blitz, good things happen, but they just didn't really do it a whole lot. And when you watch the up front, I was kind of surprised, not as much pass rush from the guys. And that was, I guess, some of my big takeaways. The pass rush wasn't there as much. And at times it just felt like the defense played on their heels. You know, Spoon, what did you kind of see out there from the defense? And then Ryan, I'll let you jump in after.
Well, the Giants have two good tackles. So it wasn't, you know, they're going to put up a good fight. And I mean, Andrew Thomas is one of the best left tackles there is. So they did a really nice job. And sometimes four guys are just not going to get there. Some days it's like that, and they're keeping in five. And I do want to look and go back. I just never got a feel for whether the Giants were keeping people in, Max protecting, what they were doing. So I do kind of want to look a little more, but it's obvious they're not getting pressure with four. Then, you know, I'm just picking, I'm, you know, cherry picking here, but I remember they come with a five-man blitz with McDuffie right up the middle. And Micah Parsons flushes, you know, quarterback right Winston up the middle. But now he's got nowhere to go because they got a fifth guy coming up the middle. And so what happens? They sack him. You know, I just thought they got really, really soft. And the Giants kept running the ball. So why aren't you putting 8-9 guys up at the line of scrimmage and daring Jameis Winston? You know, he's throwing you picks. Get up there and dare him. You know, you're not playing Malik Neighbors. He's not in the game. He's not on that offense. Darius Slayton is not there. And yet you played it like you were playing A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. I'm really curious to talk to Halfley about that, because it really seemed like they just played scared.
Ryan, just thoughts on what you saw from the defense.
Yeah, I think it's an entirely different game if the Packers could have just picked the passes that were there to be picked. You know, Jameis Winston gave him five opportunities to intercept passes today. You know, I understand there's a reason why receivers are paid to catch the ball, DBs aren't, but even if you're not going to get all five, you should get more than one. And they missed their first four. Carrington Valentine had two chances to pick a pass. Javon Bullard had an interception in his hands, and Isaiah McDuffie flattened him. I still don't know what happened with that double covered punt that Jameis Winston threw down the deep middle, where I don't think Xavier McKinney tipped the ball, but
I watched it.
Yeah, it fell right in Keyshawn Nixon's breadbasket for an easy pick. And he's a punt returner. He should have been. It was essentially a punt. And it wasn't caught. That's the biggest problem with this Packers defense. It's been the biggest problem with this Packers defense all season. No, the pass rush was I thought the Giants did better than any team this season, even Dallas, of neutralizing the Packers' pass rush. But the biggest problem is not the pass rush. It's that this defense cannot consistently take away the football, and they've never had more opportunities to do that today. One takeaway seemed like the bare minimum with how Jameis Winston played, and yet they only got one. It was a big one, 40 seconds left. Evan Williams sealed it, essentially, with that interception of the end zone. But that's their biggest Achilles heel. They need to more consistently take away the football, and they especially need to do it against a quarterback that's begging to be intercepted.
Yeah. Spoon, I think, did you have another point you were going to make?
Well, you know, it's funny because over the years, there's been some pretty good cornerback play and there's been some not great cornerback play. And I think to, you know, what some of those plays would have been if Tremont Williams had been Carrington Valentine, you know, that's two picks. You know, if Charles Woodson had been one of those guys, if Nick Collins had been back there, you know, Sam Shields, you go back and you have to get guys with ball skills. And it seems like they don't have any guys with ball skills back there, except for McKinney and Evan Williams. Yeah. And their corners, I'm interested to see how Nate Hobbs, you know, whether he could have come up with any of those. I don't know. I don't know for sure. I don't think he's got a ton of interceptions in his career. But, boy, that is really, really something they are missing. It makes a huge difference with your defense when you got a couple guys who can play the ball.
Yeah, I said before the season, so this is an evaluation. I knew it when I said it. Knowing that they were not going to have Jaire Alexander, I knew this was an evaluation that's going to follow me all season. I said, they'll be fine with the corners they have. And I do think that that's true. Like, they're fine with the corners they have. They still have a very good defense with the corners they have. But if they, to Spoon's point, had corners with ball skills, that might be the single biggest area, trait, that is keeping this defense from being elite. Right? Because this is a defense that has a lot of the ingredients to be an elite defense in this league. And there's something less than that, because you cannot be an elite defense if you do not consistently take away the football. They have one takeaway in five straight games now. It has been better. But that's nothing to write home about. That's not dominant in that department just because you're getting a takeaway every week. At some point, you'd like to see a defense built like this to be able to have a cluster of takeaways, especially when Jameis Winston is throwing the football like he was today. And, yeah, that's just not what this secondary, this corner group does well.
The hard part about it, I'll just add, is that Valentine's playing well. They don't have anybody who can cover as well as he can. And, I mean, Nixon's playing pretty well, too. He's not great, but he covers the – you know, he often covers the best receiver, and he plays aggressively, and he doesn't give up touchdowns. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing. He doesn't give up huge plays. So, you know, what are you going to do? I don't know how you change that. The way I would change it is put some pressure on the quarterback. I mean – start being more of an aggressive defense and get after people. You got these guys, Quay Walker and Edrian Cooper, who can blitz like nobody's business. They finally blitzed Keyshawn Nixon. And, you know, he caught a guy from behind. You know, he could have made a better tackle than he did. But that's the kind of stuff, you know, Bullard. When have we seen Bullard blitz from the slot? I can't even remember. You know, I just feel like
a couple times, maybe.
They're so locked into their zone defense with a four-man rush that, you know, there's times you got to get out of that. And they did that against Philadelphia. They brought, you know, now different offense, but they continually loaded the line and brought a safety up and stopped the running game. But here, you know, they're starting to bleed yards, and for some reason they wouldn't do it.
You know, Spoon, I think this is what you're saying. So tell me if it's not. But I'm not convinced, though, that even being more creative in the blitz scheme and getting even more pressure on the quarterback is going to translate to more takeaways, because this Packers cornerback group is what it is. They cover well. They force incompletions. They have pass breakups. They don't take away the football, right? And today really just was a lot of evidence to that. They didn't pressure Jameis Winston a lot, but they had a ton of opportunities. They don't take away the football.
I'm talking about getting off the field. I'm not talking about turnovers. I'm talking about getting off the field, and I'm talking about stopping the run. You know, having a safety up there because they're not stopping the run. And, you know, Detroit is going to just blast up the middle on them all game long. I mean, they're going to use David Montgomery more than they use Gibbs, and they're going to pound. And the Packers are not, unless they have guys up at the line of scrimmage, they can't stop the run. So, you know, either they got to find a big run stuffer or they got to play a more aggressive style.
Yeah, I think it definitely has to be a more aggressive style. I mean, that's going to have to be the key, because you're just not going to have many games where a quarterback is just giving you the ball. I don't think there will be a game the rest of this season where a quarterback's going to be like, hey, here's the ball for you to pick off.
Take the ball.
No, I'm good. No, I'm fine. I want to stay on the field longer. So, and I even think about one example, like even the first drop from Carrington Valentine. If he picks that, they don't score the touchdown with Devin Singletary. So maybe you're looking at, what, a 27-13 game or something like that?
Same with the last two. I believe the Javon Bullard interception that wasn't because of Isaiah McDuffie running him over, and the Keyshawn Nixon in the breadbasket double-covered punt happened on the same series that ended with a go-ahead Giants touchdown. Mm-hmm. Not taking the takeaways that are there absolutely matters.
Yeah. And speaking of which, on that deep ball, I did talk to McKinney after that. He said he got a finger on it.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, really? He said he felt like he got pushed by the defender. Yeah. And when he stuck his hand out, he said it hit his finger.
Okay.
So he did say that. So that was because I asked him and Keyshawn about it. And obviously they dropped some F-bombs about it, but they did say, like McKinney said, he felt like he got pushed a little bit, and he said it did hit his finger.
Okay.
But even then, like you said, when you watched it live, it looked like ball just came right to him, like he could have caught it almost in stride.
That could have still been caught, even with the slight deflection. That still could have been caught.
Yeah. I mean, Nixon said he should have caught it. Like, he should have came away with that play because, again, it was still right there in his area. So, all right. I don't know. Anything else on defense, or do you want to talk about kickers? Let's talk about kickers.
I think Spoon and I, you know, we agree on a lot, but I think we have a very different take on the kickers.
We do. I don't know who wants to start, Ryan. I guess I'll start with your opinion and your side of things with the kicker.
God, it just seems like they've screwed this up. I've said it for the last few weeks. Randy McManus should not have been kicking if he's not 100% healthy. When they have Lucas Haversek, who is perfect in two games, kicking just fine, still on the roster. If you're going to move on from Lucas Haversek, then okay, you got to trot an injured kicker out there. But he's been injured. He was added, Brandon McManus, to the injury report on Saturday. So there must have been a re-aggravation. It would indicate that popped up instead of just, you know, being downgraded. But if he's not healthy and you have a kicker who is kicking well, when we saw him in games, no, we don't know how he kicked in practice, but we saw him in games be perfect, 10 of 10 in two games on field goals and extra points. And then after three games on the sideline, you're going to come and have him kick in 30-mile-an-hour winds. I get it. You're not going to make excuses in this league. He should have made both extra points. No question about it. He has one job, and it's to make kicks. He didn't. But that's a tough ask. That is a tough ask. And maybe he would have been better prepared to deal with the wind had he been kicking outdoors in Lambeau Field the past couple of weeks. Instead, an injured Brandon McManus was, and he was missing kicks. I think they've botched this kicking situation.
Okay, so he's kicking outside in Green Bay, which, you know, he's got to figure out the wind on the practice field, which is just as bad. And he came in and he hadn't been kicking at all anywhere. And he came in and made those 10 kicks. So I just don't buy the argument that the fact that he sat for 3 weeks had any impact on him today. He's kicking, he's practicing. It's not like he just came back from a substitute teacher job and jumped on the field. So that part I don't buy. McManus probably has been lying to them about the severity of his injury, which you can't have, you know, that just can't be done. And he at least was honest with them on Saturday. Apparently LaFleur said they kicked him Thursday and Friday because of the Monday night. And so his leg was sore. Now, I don't know if he was hurt, you know, or if it was sore because he kicked, and it is still obviously a little bit hurt. So they overkicked him. I'm not sure why they did that. That was dumb too. But, you know, sometimes figuring out whether a guy is hurt or in pain is a tricky thing. And so sometimes guys who are in pain can still kick. McManus, he kicked off fine. Some of his field goals are okay, some aren't. I just don't know what Haversick was doing. And a couple of his kicks today looked really bad. So I don't know if that was the norm in their practices or what. All I know is they have to make the right decision now. Now they have to, you know, figure out what to do with McManus. Maybe they do have to put him on IR. But, we'll find out if Haversick is up to the challenge.
They must have felt good enough about how Haversick was kicking in practice to keep a second kicker on the roster, which teams rarely do. If his kicks in practice were such an issue, I don't know why you would waste a second spot for a kicker if he's really struggling.
Well, because you thought that McManus might get hurt.
And if that's the case, then I don't know why you'd keep putting Brandon McManus out there when he's on this borderline of being so hurt he can't kick.
Let's say if they're kicking the same in practice, let's say they're both hitting everything, I guess the default is McManus because it's his job and he's been clutch. That's all I can think of is that, you know, so they judge on who's making them and they're both making them. Let's just say it for that scenario, then you would go with McManus. Now, if McManus was missing and he clearly was bothered, then they made the wrong decision.
Or if they were both making, and Brandon McManus is dealing with that quad injury on his kicking leg so much that 3 weeks later, it's still an issue, and you have to basically remove him from the game on Saturday because it hasn't healed, I think there's merit in letting him rest that and letting Lucas Haversick take those kicks for the long game of you heal. And I get clearly he was lying about his quad injury, but you heal there. You expect to be important games to play later in the season. You need a fully healthy kicker for those kicks late in the season. You heal Lucas Haversick. You're the kicker until Brandon McManus is all the way through this thing.
I guess that was the one thing. Go ahead, Spoon. Go ahead.
No, I don't have a problem with that. I'm thinking of the past 3 weeks and how they handled it. Now, clearly he's aggravated again, and so maybe he does need more time. You know, maybe he needs to be put on IR.
Right, but the last 3 weeks, maybe he wouldn't have gotten to this point. Maybe he'd be healed by now.
Maybe. But you have guys play through injuries all the time. I mean, that's what you do to try to get – they try to get guys back onto the field, you know, performing at – even if it's 90%, you know, to do it. And that's what I assume they were doing, and it didn't work. So, yeah, if you want to say they failed in that regard, yeah. But I don't blame them for trying to stick with McManus.
Yeah. It's one of those hindsight's 2020 situations. And at least right now you can kind of go back and forth. I don't feel like really there is a right or wrong argument because both of the guys have missed some kicks.
Yeah, I'm just shocked how people have turned on McManus because
me too.
This is the guy who saved their kicking game last year.
Well, I want to make very clear.
20 of 21.
In no way, shape, or form am I turning on Brandon McManus here. I think he should have been on a part of this team. I think he should have been put on injury reserve, saving a roster spot 3 weeks ago to let him heal. I think he is their long-term kicker, not just in January of this season, but in 2026. I also think he's been kicking less than healthy with a healthy kicker on the roster. I don't think that's turning on Brandon McManus.
Well, I wasn't saying you. I'm just saying people all over are, you know, they want to cut him. They think he's horrible. What are they doing? You know, you got a guy who's perfect. Well, you know, it's not that simple.
No, I agree with you there. I think that on that we are in lockstep. Like long term, I fully agree it's Brandon McManus's job. I no qualms on that.
Yeah. So maybe this is what the meeting rooms are like for the Packers and the special team room. Maybe the coaches are having the same type of back and forth and debates on what kicker they would have, right? Who knows?
Yeah, but, well, I will say there is amongst the coaches, you seem to get different opinions on where they are. You know, Bisaccia's one opinion, LaFleur's another, McManus is another. They are not in lockstep about where things are. And that's probably where the problem is.
That's true.
Lies. It's like either McManus isn't honest, one guy's overestimating, one guy's underestimating. I don't know. But yeah, they have to fix it.
It is interesting. And it's kind of almost ironic because overall, the rest of the special teams have been pretty good the past couple of games. I think the coverages have been good.
Excellent.
Yeah. Right? They've been blocked, so they have that going for them.
Right. But I think like Aaron Mosby has really caught my attention as of late. He had some big hits in this game. And I think, yeah, especially with Nick Neiman out, it seems like Mosby has kind of stepped up and helped out in that regard as well. But, yeah, the coverage has been really good. And the punts, you know, Whelan is still Whelan in that regard. So it's ironic that they finally are figuring things out on special teams, and now they have the kicking situation that is kind of a question mark right now.
Yeah, we didn't mention Whelan, but he had that bad snap, and he kicked that line drive out of bounds. I mean, that was a really good 38-yard kick and no return. And then he bombed that 61-yarder at the end of the game. Now, I still think that should have been out of bounds. I don't think you wanted that return, but he killed it, you know? So he deserves a lot of credit.
He does. So, I mean, hey, at least in that regard, they were able to figure some things out. So, guys, as we wrap things up and before we head back to Green Bay, any final words, thoughts, or any something that I didn't bring up or ask you? Ryan, you want to start it off?
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I mentioned it pulling out of the stadium with Spoon driving the rental car with his glorious heated seat that we did not have in the back seat. It was very cold. There's just such a difference between 6-3 and 1-5, 4-1. You know, it's a game. Xavier McKinney called it a must win. And by definition, it might have been something a little less than that, but it was a really important win that they needed. They really – it's just such a difference between those two records. It keeps them pace in a very crowded NFC where there is not one dominant team. There seems to be a lot of very good teams in this conference and not one dominant team. So keeping pace matters. But ultimately what's going to matter is next week against the Vikings. Like, can they go out and get another win that they need? Like, they're all important from here on out because that's just the nature of the NFC right now. When you have a lot of good teams in a conference, keeping pace is important. The only way you do that is you continue to put pars on the board. You can continue to get wins. And so that's the question. This was a solid win. They needed this win. They got this win on the road, despite the wind, all that. Can they come up with a winning performance at home against a divisional opponent. That is going to determine the value of this win as much as anything.
Yeah. I do wonder if part of the reason why McKinney said it was such a must win because he was coming back to New York to play the Giants, right? Smoon, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's time to stop doing the mess around. You know, they're either in or they're out, and now's the time. So they got through, you know, this I don't even know how to describe this mid-season mediocrity, and now it's do or die. You know, you're going up against two division foes in 10 days, and one of them is your main competitor, or they're both fully capable of beating you. And so this is it, you know? Okay, it's almost like preseason is over. Now you better go turn it up.
Yeah, this is when it matters. Like you said, it starts Sunday with the Vikings and then Thanksgiving in Detroit. It's like, this is the time. This is when you have to buckle down and see what you're made of. So we'll be monitoring injuries throughout this week and see what's going on, you know, with Josh Jacobs and some of the other guys that went down, because Matthew Golden as well. They had a lot of guys that dropped in this game. Yeah. So that's something.
I did talk to Quay Walker, and he said he's okay. So he had a stinger.
Mm-hmm.
So that shouldn't be a long term. Mm-hmm. Jacobs, that's got to be bothersome because it's popped up, I think, the last 3 weeks, almost since he had the cat right after the calf. I think he hurt the knee, and it keeps popping up. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him and Golden too.
You know, Spoon, the more and more, the deeper and deeper we get into the season with all these injuries popping up for Josh Jacobs, I do have to wonder, and this is not to absolve the offensive line. The line needs to block better. But I do wonder, when we talk about what's wrong with the Packers' run game, it's very clear that a healthy Josh Jacobs matters. And he hasn't been healthy for a lot of this season. He's been playing through injuries, and give him credit for that. He's been playing through it. And he, before today, did have six straight games with a rushing touchdown. It was about the only thing going well in the red zone. But they need him healthy for the long term. I think that's something that is also hurting this run game.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if we saw Marshawn Lynch activated this week.
I'd be very surprised if we saw Marshawn Lynch activated this week.
Not activated, but designated to return. And Jaden Reed might be too, as well. So we might see both of those guys back. You know, with Marshawn Lynch.
Lloyd.
Marshawn Lynch was with the Seahawks.
Marshawn Lloyd.
You got that action from New York,
man. Sorry, I can't get over that. Marshawn Lloyd. You know, now's the time to do it. You might as well. This is your last shot. You know, I mean, he's going to get hurt. He's either going to get hurt or he's not. So I don't know how much more you want to wait, especially with Jacobs being banged up. I don't know.
Is there a sense, you know, you talk about Jaden Reed coming back, and that really should help this offense. But that's going to make it even more imperative that they just get the ball to the right people in the passing game. You know, you're adding another guy who Jaden Reed should get a lot of targets. Like he's one of their best receivers. But you're going to at some point just have to be very – you're going to have to really fine-tooth comb it and be – and distinguish, like, who is playing at a level – making plays at a level that they should be a bigger role in this offense than others. I know it's a tough decision because they feel like they have a lot of guys, but you're going to have a lot of guys. It doesn't mean that all your guys are the same and making plays at the same level. You've got to be very discerning on how you distribute the targets.
I think Christian Watson could get 12 targets a game. And one of the reasons is that they're going to play off him.
Yeah.
So every time teams played off Jordy Nelson, you know, Rodgers just tossed the ball over there. Same with Davante Adams, and get 7-8 yards. And I think they have to start thinking like that, because He's just too valuable, especially with teams playing so far off him.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that Malik. I think about the Malik Willis touchdown. Like, Christian Watson was covered, but Willis said, screw it. I trust my guy. I'm giving him the ball. Now, Jordan Love did it at the end as well. That throw to Watson in the corner of the end zone, like, that was a beautiful ball, great catch. But I'm like, that's just what you got to do. Like you said, feed the studs, get the ball to your best players, and watch what they do.
Great play by Malik Willis on that touchdown. But look at the two scores from Christian Watson. They both indicate why he's their best receiver, and they were so different. On the first, Christian Watson was – I spoke with him at length about these plays in the locker room. Christian Watson was not supposed to be in the middle of the end zone there. And if you watch – he talked about it, but you watch the replay, he was cutting an outbreaking route. He was crossing to the outside, to the right side of the field. But Romeo Doubs is also he's also cutting across his face. And the tight end, I believe, is John Fitzpatrick, was on that side. And the corner was playing outside leverage to prevent him from going there. So in the moment, he decides, okay, instead of flooding this zone and muddying the look here and trying to beat outside leverage, let me just sit and present a target. And he did, and Malik Willis found him. That is a very savvy play, a very savvy adjustment in the middle of a play. That's all between the ears. And he made the catch, a very tough catch. Use his size, so that's the physical part. The second touchdown, that is a play that the Packers have been trying to get to Christian Watson, a slot fade. He said like four times earlier in the game. And it's best to go against man coverage on that play. They kept getting zone, so it kept being taken away. They finally get man coverage on the touchdown. And he shows his speed. He shows his size, plucking the football over Corey Black. He shows his hands to make the finish that catch in the wind. That was a display of all the physical gifts that he has. Like, two very different touchdowns, and it showed how he is the full package at that position the Packers rave about.
So we'll see what happens when they start Sunday in Minnesota, get into this stretch, because, I mean, pull out all the tricks and do whatever you got to do to get these wins, because this is where it really all does matter. So, guys, I think we're good to go. Appreciate it, as always, for your insights. And we'll obviously get back together later in the week for another podcast to preview the game against the Vikings. But we do thank each and every one of you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. The Packers went over the Giants 27-20 at MetLife Stadium, heading back to Lambeau Field for some big-time rivalry games. So, for Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Gates.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.